Welcome to Signs of the Times, a look at recent world events from around our kitchen table.
Given that this Sunday is the fourth anniversary of the September 11th attacks in New York City, we figured we would do a special podcast. On Friday's Signs page, we had a few articles on Katrina, of course. That's been sort of the top news story. And one of them was the article on the FEMA detention camp in Oklahoma, where it pretty much looks like kind of more like a concentration camp than a refugee camp, if you will. And we made the comment that in the aftermath of 9/11, when the Patriot Act was passed, there were a lot of people who sort of paused and sat back and thought about how just a few short years before, something like the Patriot Act would have been just completely inconceivable, that the U.S. would pass this draconian legislation and restrict civil liberties. And basically people thought that this idea that the U.S., the greatest democracy on earth, would pass such legislation, that this would be basically a conspiracy theory. And we had a writer who sent us an email saying that, look, in looking at this story about the FEMA camps in the aftermath of Katrina, that she wrote, "This is all looking so reminiscent of the conspiracy theory stuff I read years ago, where FEMA was to play a key role in the establishment of the U.S. police state, operating detention camps for dissidents. This whole Katrina business is looking more and more like a dress rehearsal for that scenario every day." What we see is that in the aftermath of September 11th, as well as the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, there is this sort of creeping fascism, and more importantly, there is the reaction of the American people to those specific events. And in particular, it's rather interesting when we compare this sort of creeping fascism in America to what happened in Nazi Germany. And this is a comparison that we've made before because we think it's rather instructive. So given the upcoming September 11th anniversary, we were taking a look over past Signs pages and past commentary we'd written, and one of the articles that we found is entitled "But Then It Was Too Late," and it was written by the Third Reich Roundtable. And in this article, they discuss how in Nazi Germany, it was a very gradual process of acclimatizing the population to being taken over, to the fascist laws, to oppression. And the comments that they make are particularly interesting and I think particularly relevant to what's been going on in the U.S. And in the article, the Third Reich Roundtable writes, "What no one seemed to notice was the ever-widening gap after 1933 between the government and the people." And of course, we see a similar gap in the United States. And continuing, they write, "What happened here was the gradual habituation of the people, little by little, to being governed by surprise, to receiving decisions deliberated in secret, to believing that the situation was so complicated that the government had to act on information which people could not understand, or so dangerous that, even if the people could understand it, it could not be released because of national security. And their sense of identification with Hitler, their trust in him, made it easier to widen this gap and reassured those who otherwise would have worried about it." Now, of course, you might say that, well, in the U.S., pretty much the American people are none too happy with George Bush at the moment, and the polls indicate that something like 46% of people think that the way that Bush handled the aftermath of Katrina was terrible. Of course, that depends on what poll you look at, because there was another poll that indicated that most people thought it was the local and state government. So, of course, polls can be a little biased at times, we suppose. So continuing on, we read, "The separation of government from the people, this widening of the gap, took place so gradually and so insensibly, each step disguised, perhaps not even intentionally, as a temporary emergency measure, or associated with true patriotic allegiance, or with real social purposes. And all the crises and reforms, real reforms too, so occupied the people that they did not see the slow motion underneath, or the whole process of government growing remoter and remoter." And here is where it starts to become a bit interesting. They discuss how the dictatorship in Nazi Germany and the process of its coming into being was, above all, diversionary. It basically provided an excuse to not think for people who basically didn't want to think anyway. So eventually, the question is asked, well, how do we avoid this? I mean, among ordinary people, highly educated ordinary people, you know, how can this be avoided? And the response is that, frankly, they don't know. And one of the interesting comments that's made is that perhaps the only way that it can be avoided is that one must foresee the end in order to resist, or even see the beginnings. So in other words, in order to understand, for example, what's going on in the U.S. With the September 11th attacks, the aftermath of Katrina, what we really have to look at and understand is, you know, who is benefiting from all this, and what is the goal? What's the intended end result of it all? And it is only in examining this and figuring out who is behind it and what their motivations are and how they are going about doing what they're doing that we can even begin to attempt to understand how it began and how it is progressing. And to that end, we figured today that we would look at September 11th in perhaps a slightly different light, that being, who are the powers that be, how are they doing what they're doing to the American people, what techniques do they use, and to what end?
Yeah, because when we approach the idea of a 9/11 conspiracy or evidence for a 9/11 conspiracy, one of the main problems that certain people have, in fact, people that have looked at the evidence for a conspiracy, one of the main problems that these people have is that they claim that they're a conspiracy of the size of 9/11 would simply be impossible, given the nature of the U.S. government and the federal agencies that are part of that government, that there would have had to have been a cohesion and a networking, if you want, between all of these so many different federal agencies to carry off an event, an inside job like 9/11, that it's simply impossible for that to have been the case. But what is missing from the awareness of such people is really the true nature of the way I suppose the world is essentially governed and has been governed for many, many years. And here we're talking about a secret government, if you want. We know that's a word that has been bandied about an awful lot, but there is an awful lot of evidence, and it's not just us that is saying that there is that such a secret government exists. In fact, Victor Marchetti, who is a former high-ranking CIA official, wrote a book entitled "The CIA and the Cult of Intelligence." This is, in fact, the first book that the U.S. government ever went to court to censor before publication. In the book, Marchetti tells us that there is a cabal that rules the world, and that its holy men are the clandestine professionals of the Central Intelligence Agency. Marchetti goes on to say that this cult is patronized and protected by the highest level government officials in the world. Its membership is composed of those in the power centers of government, industry, commerce, finance, and labor. It manipulates individuals in areas of important public influence, like in the academic world and the mass media. The secret cult is a global fraternity of a political aristocracy whose purpose is to further the political policies of persons or agencies unknown. It acts covertly and illegally. Backing up Marchetti's words are the words of Daniel K. Inouye, who is a U.S. senator, and he said that, and we quote, "There exists a shadowy government with its own air force, its own navy, its own fundraising mechanism, and the ability to pursue its own ideas of national interest, free from all checks and balances, and free from the law itself." Now, we do have some historical evidence that such a group or organization, at least, does actually exist. We can cite past events concerning U.S. government projects, for example, Project Manhattan, which we've mentioned before, where basically Project Manhattan was the project to develop a nuclear bomb during the early 1940s, and that project was conducted and carried out to completion completely without the awareness of Congress or most of the executive government, and it cost a vast amount of money at the time. It cost something like $2 billion, which is probably something like $200 or $300 billion in today's language. So the power and the control that a group would need to have to be able to actually carry out such a project with such vast resources is really quite frightening. And again, this is a historical fact that this occurred. So in response to the allegations that 9/11, for example, could not have been carried out by the US government. We, to a large extent, agree, therefore, that it could not have been carried out, and in fact wasn't carried out by the US government, but rather was orchestrated by a select group or faction within the US government that are the members of which are generally unknown. And have always been unknown and will remain unknown, and that's for a very, very specific reason, obviously, because they prefer to have scapegoats or puppets in the public eye that is essentially the overt U.S. government and its officials, who are essentially their spokespeople, and do their bidding. And obviously, if in the eventuality that something went wrong, or they were there was some kind of exposure of any aspect of the project that this group carries out, then they can always blame the overt public government officials.
And this is why, I mean, you know, Bush mentioned puppets, and we remark from time to time that we think that Bush is basically a puppet. And of course, in reading the science page, you've probably noticed that we tend to attack George Bush rather regularly with the facts. And I mean, the bottom line is the secret government, as Joe mentioned, is pretty much unknown and sort of the man behind the curtain. But nevertheless, they are acting basically through George Bush and Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and the whole Bush gang. So regarding the secret government and the idea of conspiracies, one question that comes up is, how exactly is it that they do what they do? Because obviously, if this is a secret government, as it were, then that means that it's a limited number of people, sort of a small group that manipulates and controls, and how exactly is it that they are able to manipulate and control countries and indeed the world politically, for example. And perhaps some potential answers are found in an article entitled Chemical Hallucinations, Mind Control, and Dr. Jose Delgado by Laura Nyajic. And in this article that she wrote, which is basically centered around a book called Mind Control, The Current Situation, by Harry V. Martin and David Call, they discuss a man who goes by the name of Dr. Delgado, or at least that's perhaps a pseudonym, and Laura provides a very interesting excerpt regarding this mysterious Dr. Jose Delgado. Apparently, he made remarks to the Congress, which are recorded in the Congressional Record number 262E, volume 118, and he appeared in front of Congress February 24th, 1974. And in his remarks, he says that we need a program of psychosurgery for political control of our society. The purpose is physical control of the mind. Everyone who deviates from the given norm can be surgically mutilated. The individual may think that the most important reality is his own existence, but this is only his personal point of view. This lacks historical perspective. And then here's the kicker. He says, man does not have the right to develop his own mind. This kind of liberal orientation has great appeal. We must electrically control the brain. Someday armies and generals will be controlled by electrical stimulation of the brain. Now, of course, this sounds a little squirrely, until you read that the New York Times ran an article on May 17th, 1965, which was entitled Matador with a Radio Stops Wild Bull. And this article details the story of Dr. Delgado's experiments at Yale University School of Medicine. And the New York Times article states that basically, there was a matador and in a bull ring, and the bull was charging at the matador, but it says that the charging animal's horn never reached the man behind the heavy red cape, because moments before that could happen, Dr. Delgado whipped out a small radio transmitter, pressed a button, and the bull came to a screeching halt. And apparently the bull was obeying commands in his brain that were being called forth by electrical stimulation, by radio signals. According to Dr. Delgado, experiments of this type have also been performed on humans. While giving a lecture on the brain in 1965, he said that science has developed a new methodology for the study and control of cerebral function in animals and humans. So here we have a technique by which it is possible to basically control the human will. This is something also that Richard Dolan writes about in his book UFOs and the National Security State. There was a radio transceiver of very limited power where it didn't even require implanted electrodes in the subject's brain. It was simply through the use of certain frequencies at a certain power, modulated in a certain way, you could not only influence the emotions and thoughts of a human being, you could in fact control what they do. And Richard Dolan provides documentation to support all this, and if you haven't read it, you should pick up a copy of UFOs in the National Security State, which you can get at keyholepublishing.com. It's a fascinating and very well-researched book. But as amazing as that is, there appears to be an even more perhaps insidious method of controlling the human will, and that is the work that was done. Generally, it's known as green bombing. There's another article on Cassiopeia.org entitled The Green Bomb Speech, again written by Laura Nyjagic, and it covers a lecture by D.C. Hammond, and the lecture was originally entitled Hypnosis in MPD, Ritual Abuse, but is now generally known as the Green Bomb Speech, and it was delivered at the 4th Annual Eastern Regional Conference on Abuse and Multiple Personality on Thursday, June 25th, 1992, in Alexandria, Virginia. And the article covers how, at the end of World War II, in fact, before the war even ended, Alan Dulles and people from the intelligence community in the U.S. were already in Switzerland, and they were basically engaging in what amounted to Operation Paperclip, trying to smuggle Nazi scientists out of Europe and to the U.S. And it appears that not only did they get out German rocket scientists, but they also got out some Nazi doctors who had been doing mind control research in the concentration camps. And after these scientists were brought to the United States, they apparently helped the U.S. intelligence agencies develop mind control techniques. And while you really have to read the Green Bomb speech, and of course we'll post a link on our podcast page this weekend so you can read more about it, there's a lot of detail that we're not going to cover now, but you'll definitely want to read. But apparently they started doing mind control research for military intelligence in military hospitals in the United States. And essentially, as the original title of the article indicates, they pretty much used what's generally termed multiple personality disorder, but more specifically what they did is they used torture, electric shocks, and other even more unpleasant techniques to torture the subjects and basically shatter their will and to essentially create multiple personalities within the individual, which could then be controlled and instructed to do whatever they wanted them to do. They often started on a person from childhood. Hammond claims that they actually, based on his work with multiple victims, they targeted basically entire family lines. Quite often, if a child was affected, either the mother or the father, or sometimes both, would also have been victims of this brainwashing. And to give an idea of exactly how they did this, one of the people that Hammond was treating, he was a mental health professional. She, in the course of the treatment, she revealed that what happened was that she would go into a room and they would do all sorts of things to her, but she would be wired up and monitored with electroencephalographs, and they had placed electrodes on her, for example, four on her head and one in her vagina. Sometimes they would begin and they would say to her that she was angry with someone in the group, and she would say, "No, I'm not," and then they would violently shock her. And essentially they would say the same thing over and over again until she complied and didn't make any negative response. And so this was the sort of rather appalling technique that they would use to basically destroy the personality and split it and create these other branches, which they would label by Greek letters. There was, you know, the alpha alters and the betas and the gammas, and there were even, as Hammond discovered, self-destruct alters, where if someone got too close to the truth in deprogramming the person, they would be incapacitated and in severe pain, they would become suicidal, The details are all included in Laura's article, and we would strongly encourage you all to read them, because while it is rather appalling, it gives a very interesting look into exactly how this process can work. And at one point, Hammond indicates that he would really like to have a session with Sirhan Sirhan, implying that, in fact, there's really no need for the secret government and their henchmen to implant electrodes into anyone's brain. They can simply kidnap people and reprogram them, and they have mind-controlled assassins. They have pretty much everything they need, a small army to basically do their bidding. And one of the very interesting things that Dr. Hammond says is what one person asks him, and they say that there seems to be some similarity between this sort of programming and those who claim that they've been abducted by aliens. And so this person asks, well, you know, is there anything to this? And Dr. Hammond responds, I'll share my speculation. That comes from others, really. I've not dealt with any of those people. However, I know a therapist that I know and trust and respect who I've informed about all this a couple years ago and has found a lot of patients and so on, who is firmly of the belief that those people are in fact ritual abuse victims who have been programmed with that sort of thing to destroy all their credibility. If somebody's coming in and reporting abduction by a flying saucer, who's going to believe them on anything else in the future? Also, as a kind of thing that can be pointed to and said, this is as ridiculous as that. So here we see a sort of an interesting twist on the alien abduction phenomenon, and in fact, Laura has written about this before, that in fact many people who claim that they've been abducted by aliens and flying saucers could perhaps be victims of this this type of abuse and brainwashing, and that in fact the alien abduction phenomenon is essentially a cover for this. Of course, that doesn't mean that the universe is a large place. Certainly there are other intelligent life forms out there, or so I think, but again, it provides an interesting twist on the alien abduction phenomenon. And here and again, the article goes on, and Dr. Hammond discusses how he believes that this ritual abuse programming is widespread, systematic, very organized, and that it involves people in NASA, the CIA, the military, including very high-ups in the military. And so here we have a potential mechanism by which, for example, you have Arab terrorists who are launching attacks on numerous countries around the world. And, of course, in the case of the September 11th attacks, as we've pointed out, especially as Laura Nyajic has pointed out in her article, Mossad and Moving Companies, Masterminds of Global Terrorism, it seems that on September 11th, there were a bunch of Israelis videotaping and dancing as the World Trade Center towers collapsed. So certainly we have the idea that not all of these quote-unquote terrorist attacks were perpetrated by Arab terrorists, but certainly there may be a certain number of Arabs who were, or anyone for that matter, who was kidnapped and brainwashed and used as essentially the ultimate weapon. And, of course, you get into the assassination of JFK, the various assassinations that have occurred in the U.S. and elsewhere over time.
Yes, that's not to suggest that the secret government is actually individually brainwashing many members of the population of any given country, but more so it just gives us an insight into the mindset of such people and the interests that they have and that they pursue.
And perhaps it gives an idea of exactly how perhaps such a small group of people can do so much, you know, behind the scenes without anyone knowing about it. Because, of course, if you have a network and basically what amounts to a small army of people who have basically been brainwashed and completely controlled, then you have patsies, you have assassins, you have people who perhaps don't even know that they have been.
Yeah, they don't know that they've been programmed to kind of set the ball rolling, as it were. You know, a spate of killings, like we had, like the two kids in the Columbine school shootings, and we had the Washington sniper and various other incidents across the U.S. and across other parts of the world that were then used by governments to justify the introduction of further strictures on civil liberties, etc., which takes us back to 9/11 and the symbolism of 9/11 and what it was really all about, because obviously on one level it provided a justification for a war of invasion a war of conquest of Iraq and Afghanistan and probably soon to be the greater Middle East. But on another level, it seems to be that it was a testing, or somewhat of a testing, of the will of the American people, and to a lesser extent the will of the people of the rest of the world. Because one of the questions that comes up is did the U.S. government really need to carry out 9/11, for example, to impose the various strictures and clampdowns on civil liberties that have occurred in the aftermath of the attacks? Because obviously in any given situation they could easily just as we're saying, use one of these mind programmed slaves or carry it out themselves, essentially carry out an attack, a nuclear attack or any other kind of attack like 9/11 themselves, and in as a result of that they could simply impose martial law, which would negate the necessity for any legal, let's say, passing of things like the Patriot Act and the Patriot Act II, etc., which obviously severely restrict the liberties of the American population. But the idea really is that each time that the government presents a lie in the form of truth to the American people and to the people of any other country, they are really testing testing the will of the people to essentially stand up and say, to either stand up and say that's a lie or to accept the lie as truth. And with each successive time that this occurs, this is a breaking down or an abridging of the free will and the will in general of the population to first of all to recognize truth. Or recognize a lie that is being presented as truth, and to simply stand up and say and reject that. So, as we've seen with 9/11, a large number, particularly in the immediate aftermath, anyway, a large number of people all around the world accepted the official story. And obviously, this acceptance by the people was greatly benefited by the dissemination of the official government story in the mainstream press. And we note often that it really comes down to this control of the mainstream press that dictates the level or the extent of the success of these campaigns that are waged against the populations of countries by any particular government, because ultimately it is the responsibility of the press, or supposedly it's the responsibility of the press to bring the truth to the people. But as we've noted on many occasions, this is simply not the case. The mainstream media all around the world is essentially a tool of government, and it essentially robs the average person in the street of any access to what's really happening. And this is obviously gets back to what we were talking about in Nazi Germany, that this is exactly what happened in Nazi Germany, that the Nazis controlled pretty much everything, including the press, and were free to disseminate all sorts of propaganda that were essentially lies, and the people bought the lie. And one thing we have to remember about Nazi Germany is that the German people were ordinary people, like ordinary intelligent people, like most people in the US and in Europe and around the world, and they were by no means dummies. They weren't mind controlled or mind programmed. Yet they, pretty much to a man or to a woman, they swallowed the lies that were being presented to them as truth, and it was as a result of that the millions and millions of people essentially died and were massacred during the Second World War.
And Germans in Nazi Germany weren't necessarily mind controlled in the sense that I was talking about in terms of the so-called Greenbauming. But getting back to the but then it was too late article that I had mentioned, the comment is made that after the war began, the Nazi government could basically do anything they wanted, anything that was necessary to win the war, including the so-called final solution regarding the quote-unquote Jewish problem, where basically the Nazis had always talked about solving this Jewish problem that they perceived, but that not even the Nazis could actually do anything about it until the war actually gave them, you know, until the progression of taking over civil liberties and the progression of the war, and eventually it got to the point where they could actually act and do something about it. And this is exactly the same thing that's happening in the U.S., with the passing of the Patriot Act 1, what has generally become known as the Patriot Act 2, and little by little, bit by bit, the American population is being conditioned, if you will, to accept what amounts to a state of martial law, even if that state is never actually declared. And as the war on terror progresses, it is proceeding in basically a similar fashion to what happened in Nazi Germany.
Yeah, I mean, currently the American people, as a result of the 9/11 attacks and the various policies that have been introduced since then, they have been at each successive point in the progression of that of those policies, they have been asked, essentially, albeit not officially, but they have been asked symbolically, if you like, by their government, if they are going to accept the truth, or a lie as the truth. And until now, it seems that a majority, anyway, of American people have actually accepted the lie as truth. And it is systematically and very, very, very definitely robbing them of all of the freedoms that they have up until now, anyway, held dear. And as Scott mentioned at the beginning of the podcast today, in Nazi Germany, the use of fear was very, or of an outside threat was really one of the major and most important tools that was used to for the Nazi Party to implement their plans, their diabolical plans, by presenting this threat in such a complex and frightening way that the average person just was forced in a way just to give up any responsibility or any control that they might have had over deciding, you know, whether this threat was real or not. And you know, it put people in fear of their own lives, essentially, in the face of this threat. And as Scott mentioned, it essentially forced people just to want to switch off their minds and allow their government to take control of it, which is obviously a serious mistake given what we know about the nature of government and the very nature of power and how it corrupts people. In fact, there was a story from around this time last year, an intervention magazine called the title of the article was "The Politics of the Closed Mind." The author of the article was in Springfield in Missouri, kind of walking around asking people about their impressions of the current state of the US and the war in Iraq, etc., etc. And he states, "I met a man today who did not know the difference between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. He did not even know the difference between Iraq and Afghanistan. But he did know about the war on terrorism. Well, sort of. We had to do something when they knocked those buildings down in New York," Joe insisted, his mouth twisted with anger. "I calmly explained to this World War II veteran and former mechanical engineer that it was not Iraqis who flew those airplanes into the World Trade Center towers, but Al-Qaeda, which was based not in Iraq, but in Afghanistan, two very different countries." Joe replied with a look of confusion and then said, "When they say all those foreign names, I just turn my mind off." "Turn your mind off?" "Yeah, turn my mind off," he repeated defiantly. Joe is in his 80s and lives in rural southwest Missouri, an area that identifies with a long time embittered deep south. Missouri was the northernmost slave state, and as opposed to the metropolitan areas of St. Louis and Kansas City that feel more like the moderate north. Joe thinks it was the liberal media and those liberal politicians, in quotes, who lost the Vietnam War, so today he watches Fox News and only Fox News. Joe doesn't have to learn those strange-sounding foreign names because he trusts his basic instincts, or, as he says, his gut feelings, and of course, Fox News. Joe's mind can be turned off, Fox is turned on, and with complete confidence scream, "Kill them all." So this is a very good example of the effects of what we're talking about here, of the use of fear to essentially affect pretty much the same thing as if you know, and the individual who experiences the fear, as if he had been or he or she had been essentially taken in and literally mind programmed, because the result is obviously the same, where you have large numbers of a population who essentially just toe the government line and believe absolutely everything that the government says, and it's all based on the propagation of fear and a threat to the lives of those people. So we noticed that the really the defining moment for the propagation of this threat that has led to this general mind programming of the population of America and to a lesser extent the rest of the world was 9/11. In terms of 9/11 established very very concretely the threat to the very lives of individual citizens. And it certainly seems that that this massive effort and energy that has been put into doing this has not been done for no reason whatsoever. Obviously, the direct effect of this is to, as we mentioned, to abridge the free will of the population and to herd them to an order of control that is really unprecedented, and to force people to accept the strictures and essentially the policies and of the government and the way that the government wants the population to act and think and believe about the state of the world and the country that they live in. Now, based on our previous historical research that we have published, and that specifically Laura has written an awful lot about in her book, The Secret History of the World, and other books that she's published, there is, as we've mentioned before, an awful lot of evidence for the fact that the Earth goes through cyclical catastrophes. It's no big surprise, really. It's not really a big thing, although it might seem like it on first glance. But certainly, at the minute, we're seeing an awful lot of activity. Most recently, in terms of Hurricane Katrina, and in last December, the massive earthquake in Indonesia. So it's getting a lot easier to conceive of the idea that the planet does periodically go through serious natural cataclysms.
And Joe hasn't even mentioned, you know, even given everything that's gone on with Hurricane Katrina. Of course, FEMA has just come out and said, you know, back in August 2001, they had predicted a terrorist attack on New York, a hurricane striking New Orleans, and an earthquake in California. And of course, we've seen Russia came out recently and said that the Kamchatka Peninsula was basically due for a large quake,
which is right across the water from the north, the northwest coast of the U.S., right on the Canadian border there at Oregon, not far from Mount Rainier, and we have spoken in the past about the possibility of a large quake there that would result in a tsunami of similar proportions to the tsunami last year in Indonesia.
And that's to say nothing of the our science meteor supplement, which indicates that in fact there have been quite a few sightings of meteorites, and obviously it's a lot bigger than just one hurricane or just a few earthquakes or a little bit of climate change. It's based on all the data we've gathered and the historical research we've done, it appears to be a rather momentous and enormous period of change, to put it mildly.
So certainly it doesn't take a lot of imagination to think or to come to the conclusion that this secret government that we've been speaking of has come to the same conclusions, and probably long before we ever came to these conclusions, they came to the conclusion that, or were furnished with the knowledge by parties unknown, that that the Earth goes through cyclical catastrophes, and that there is one very possibly coming up in the not too distant future. And we're talking here about essentially back to square one, that the entire civilization of the planet, or the civilizations of the planet, will be turned back, the clock will be turned back and they will start again. And we're talking about a massive reduction in the population of the planet as a result of that. And all of these strictures that have that are being put in place, including the, you know, it operates on many levels. You've got 9/11 as a pretext to invade Iraq and to secure to position the U.S. military around the world in the most strategic places in terms of oil, so that in a post-cataclysmic situation they would be able to immediately pick up and be in control again. But at the same time, you've got the benefit of such attacks like 9/11, where they control and the population in terms of fear and this terrorist threat, so that nothing is left to chance. In a way, from the point of view of this secret government, they are determined to make sure that in the event of a worldwide catastrophe that is certainly unpredictable, even from their point of view, that they remain in control and that they ensure that nothing unexpected occurs, and that they appear on the other side in the same positions they are in at present. As most of you will be aware, we don't only dedicate ourselves to doing podcasts. We have been working away in the background, as evidenced by the vast amount of material on our website and on our Daily Science page. And in fact, since this is the fourth anniversary of 9/11, we have been putting our efforts into, over the past, you know, several months, we've been putting our efforts into putting a new book together that deals specifically with 9/11. The title of the book being 9/11, The Ultimate Truth, and that title really says it all. The book is a collaborative effort, but a large part of it is the fruit of the work of Laura Knight Yadchik.
Yeah, and this 9/11, The Ultimate Truth, the new book, it directly relates to a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about today. And given that it's about 9/11, it's basically a book that delves quite deeply into what amounts to the event that started the current push by the powers that be for control and essentially domination.
Yeah, it gives a very broad perspective on the entire 9/11 event. It goes back a long way to put the 9/11 attacks in a perspective. The events that really created the current world climate that we're experiencing at the minute, and it also presents some very interesting theories and possibilities about where it is all going to go.
And the book will be available for sale at qfgpublishing.com officially on October 1st, but if you'd like, you will be able to pre-order it starting Sunday, September 11th, 2005. So that about wraps it up for this week. Thank you for joining us, and as always, you can find articles related to all that we've discussed today at science-of-the-times.org. And thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week.